Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you could join us this morning. Today is Bullies to Buddies Day. And as most of you know, we work out of a workbook that was written by Israel Kalman. And he founded Bullies to Buddies. He was on the show for a long time, 6 or 7 months. He joined Shelley and I once a week. And now he's so busy because of what he's put together, he's no longer available to us. However, I do stay in touch with him. And I decided a few months ago to start working through the workbook because it covers just about everything. And last week, we talked about a lot about morality and teaching our kids about morals and what's right, what's wrong, what you should do, what you don't do. It's a big thing, having morals, and it's an important thing in your life, not just when you're a kid, but for your whole life. Shelley and I did a lot of talking about how we know adults that are a little lacking in the morality department. And we talk about the fact that it seems to be kind of lost in the shuffle of all the other things that are going on. But this week, knowing I was going to finish this chapter and move on to a couple other things in regard to what can be done in schools, I paid special attention to things that I got in my emails and on Facebook and things that I saw in the news, etc. And it seems like not having the proper guidance as to how you should behave about certain things that are unusual, that you didn't expect, things that pop up in your life or things that you are faced with, is a problem, is really, really a problem. For instance, a little girl with her grandmother goes into a Kentucky Fried Chicken. The little girl was attacked by a dog. She's severely scarred. She lost her eye. She wears an adorable eye patch that looks like it was made by Grandma. It's very cute little eye patch. The little girl is very smiley, but she does have some scarring on her face, and her eye is gone. She was asked to leave Kentucky Fried Chicken because she was upsetting some of the other guests. Now, where, how, why did whoever was running or managing that chicken house think in any way, shape, or form that was, first of all, normal behavior, second of all, ethical, moral, anything you want to call it? Why would they think that was okay? Then, of course, the story we read yesterday about the little girl being told that she's got to dress according to the Christian school protocol if she wants to stay in that school because she prefers to wear jeans and T-shirts and likes to collect coins and baseballs, etc. Again, where does the assumption come from that it's your right, I don't care what seat you're sitting in, that it's your right to say anything about that? It's not good. It's really, really not good. And then, of course, we have all the stuff that's going on with our friend Carrie. Now, Carrie has gotten some good news here, actually yesterday. It looks as though they are going to move forward with her court case. And the court in question has expedited all of the proceedings. So it's possible that this little baby boy could be home with his family, his mommy, his brothers and sisters, everybody in a home that already is in love with him for the first time ever within days. And it's kind of, it's another one of those things. The young woman in charge at the adoption home, gentle care, was supposed to be trained efficiently to assess what she was being told, to understand if this was going to be a healthy, happy placing of a newborn baby in another home, which happens, or if this was just a woman under tremendous duress who needed some counseling to be able to make a proper decision. This young woman wasn't trained well enough to be able to make those assessments. So consequently, Carrie now has had to fight for something that's rightfully, you know, undeniably hers. So again, this all falls into the category of morals. So let's bring Shelley in so we can open the book, but we're going to finish talking about all the different things that are in this chapter in Izzy's book, and then we're actually going to move in to a new chapter that talks about some of the things that can be done in a school and what kind of teaching we can do for our kids so that they don't feel like victims. Now, let me say on this first note, if Carrie had felt like a victim, she would have quit fighting, and she would have lost her little boy forever. But she didn't quit fighting, and she went through all the proper channels. She never said anything on Facebook. She never talked. She gave facts and truths, but she didn't just, she just didn't defame and ridicule and persecute without, actually, she didn't do any of that, in my opinion. She just gave the facts and said, all I want is my son back. I made a mistake. The adopting family, instead of giving the baby back to Carrie, gave the baby back to the home, the, for all intents and purposes, the orphanage. So, again, where were the morals in this? Where were the morals? Where was the proper etiquette into how to handle this? Is it because nobody's being properly trained, or is it because of our general way of thinking about things? Good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey.
How you doing, honey?
Doing pretty good. Yeah, that story about the little girl is, for me, kind of shocking. I didn't even think, first of all, I'm stunned that anybody would persecute a child, number one. That always just blows my mind. Secondly, that somebody would think that they would have the right to ostracize somebody just because of the way they look. I mean, if somebody came in a wheelchair missing a leg, would they have also felt that that made them too uncomfortable to allow the person to be there while they were eating? I mean, where does it stop, you know? I mean, some people might not like the look of an iPad. Some people might not like the sight of somebody missing a limb or blonde hair or tattoos. I mean, where does it stop? It's ludicrous that these individuals, number one, even thought they had the right to ask the little girl to leave, but that they would even go there. I mean, I'm very much offended by that story because it shows a complete lack of maturity. It shows a complete lack of just basic human compassion. Here this little girl obviously survived something pretty horrific that probably the people looking at her might not have fared as well with, because you said she was all smiley and everything. And then here they're just persecuting her even more. I think it's unconscionable.
Well, and it is. You're absolutely right. And it's funny that you say that. because this morning I sat looking at her face, and I pulled it up on my computer so I could really enlarge her picture. And I thought to myself, my heart ached a little bit, and I thought to myself, but look at the grin on her face, and look at the twinkle in her eye. I mean, she's fine. She's really fine. And I thought to myself, you know, you cannot stop an unstoppable child. A child is born with the ability to see the sunshine on a rainy day anytime. That's what's so amazing about them. I spend time with the great-grandson whose legs are in, I don't know, those casts. Each cast must weigh like 5 pounds apiece. He's 6 months old. And this started when he was 3 months old.
Right.
And the surgeries, and then the getting so sick and having the spinal meningitis inflamed with MRSA and all the other things that have happened to him, yet all you have to do is say his name and he grins from ear to ear. They
yep.
have this ability to not wallow in self-pity. So they don't.
It's wonderful. Yep.
It's amazing. And when you see that and you know that there are people that survive in this world that are beating that out of a child.
Uh-huh.
I can't even think of anything bad enough to do to them. Honestly, I can't.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with that.
So again, a lot of this is based on your own personal morals. Now, I remember years ago working in restaurants all my life. This man would come in to the restaurant early in the morning, and he would run. He was very athletic. He was amazing, you know, as far as that went. Every day, same thing. But he'd come in, and he'd take his running sneakers off sitting at the booth and put his feet up on the seat across from him in his booth. You know, it was his booth, and nobody else was with him. And he would take his sneakers off and put his feet up. And I saw him do it a couple times, and I waited to see, watched my guests to see if anybody was going to get excited about it or upset about it, and nobody did several times. So I let it go. I'd go to his table. I didn't smell the odor of funky feet or anything like that, so I just let it go. Well, one day he does it after doing it several times and me not saying anything, and he does it, and these older ladies in a booth right beside him could smell his feet. And they called me over and whispered in my ear, Renee, can you please say something to this young man? And they were trying to be nice about it. They were trying not to be overbearing or rude or anything. But it was ruining their breakfast. So I went over and I said, Alan, you've got to put your sneaks back on. Some of the guests are not real happy about you sitting here with your sneakers off and your bare feet up on them. And he goes, Renee, I do this all the time. I said, I know. And a lot of the times it doesn't bother anybody. Today it is bothering somebody. So please be courteous and put your shoes back on. You realize it's against the health code for me to let you sit in here with your shoes off. You know, I'm not supposed to do that. But I did because first I observed and saw that nobody was being offended by it, made him happy. I was okay with it as long as his feet didn't stink terrible and everything, and they didn't. Well, this day, apparently, I didn't, and I still didn't smell anything, but the ladies did. So luckily, everything worked out okay. He was a little begrudging, but he put his sneakers back on and just looked at me. And the next day he came back. And every day after that, he never took his sneakers off again. But he still kept coming into the restaurant, right? So I'm put in mind of that and many other situations very similar to that. But it was all in, you know, to pat Renee on her back, how I handled it. Right? I mean, it was what it was. But how could somebody come up to a child and say, you know, you can't be in here because too many people are upset, you know, by your face. What did this person say? And what did this person say to the grandmother, who obviously is just so happy to still have this twinkly little girl? I mean, it makes you wonder what the hell people are thinking, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm telling you. If that particular story shows bad behavior on multiple people's parts. First of all, the people that felt they had a right to complain to begin with, and then secondly, the management of the restaurant that then compounded the insensitivity and the lack of compassion and the unconscionable behavior by enforcing the request of the complaint. In this particular situation, there was no rational, compassionate adult at the helm. You know, I mean, were we dealing with all these minimum wage teenagers that are just doing this to, you know, to get some extra? I mean, like, who made the decision? Who was the one that actually asked them to leave? Was it somebody who really is a manager, or was it one of these kids that work there and doesn't know any better? You know.
Well, I mean, if you have, here's the truth. It said management requested her to leave, but you can't. I mean, you know, that could be a 17-year-old in today's the way things are being. Joshi, who just, by the way, I was going to mention this today, flew away from home yesterday and is in South Carolina to begin his 10 weeks of boot camp, and. Kind of a tough day for all of us. First time he's ever been away from us. First time he's ever flown on a plane. But we texted back and forth last night, and he seems to be doing okay. So it's kind of exciting and scary and a little difficult for all of us all at the same time. You know how that goes. But he works at a fast food restaurant, sit-down restaurant, but fast food. And he works in the kitchen, and he's been there almost a year now, I guess, and his job is going to wait for him when he comes back from boot camp, but then he's also going to start school. He's got to finish 12th grade, and then he's going to go on to college. But I asked him if the restaurant has invited him back when he gets back from boot camp, and he said yes. So there are times when the person in charge is like a 19-year-old that's been there for like about a year.
Exactly, right.
Because they're the only ones that will work for that minimum wage and still deal with some of the responsibilities. An adult who's in that position is like, I'm not taking all that responsibility for $8 an hour. But kids will, because for one thing, it's a morale booster. And for another thing, it makes them feel, you know, kind of like they're moving up in the world. But, yeah, a lot of your places are run by very, very, very young people who don't have the advantage of experience. So, but I don't know the situation with this. But I
and
do know.
One of the things that confuses me, although I probably did see it when I was younger, and this isn't a pat on my back, it's just something that I've seen as a difference. But it also seems that teenagers today are almost more immature than teenagers when I was a teenager. They lack some common sense. They lack some normal human compassion and sense of responsibility. Everything is always somebody else's fault. I didn't see quite as much of that when I was a teenager growing up, although I tended to be even more responsible and more adult-like than even most of my friends. I was, in some case, the youngest one in the group. And yet I was always, my friends used to make a joke that I was like the moral compass of our group. And, you know, they would kind of like defer to me if I got upset over something, because sometimes they acted kind of goofy and in a way that wasn't really very nice, you know. And if I protested a little bit, then they would stop acting the way they were, you know. But it just seems that the teenagers today are even more irresponsible and immature than teenagers when I was a kid. And I'm not sure why that is. But they're being put in positions of responsibility without the, you know, without the ability or the discernment to be able to make appropriate decisions.
Yes, yes. So, but again, it is about what we teach them and the things that they need to learn. So I do want to get to the workbook, but first I would like to mention again for everybody to put some really good energy out there for our friend Carrie, because it's entirely possible that within the week, baby Camden could be back in his home. So,
my prayers are, I think what she's done is completely courageous, and I think that she should be very proud of herself for setting a very good example for other people that are, you know, if you're involved in something, even if you made the mistake and you got yourself there, it doesn't mean you have to wallow and stay there. People, there is a way to fix situations, but sometimes you have to be willing to put out the effort and to just move forward and do it and not sit there and complain about how lousy your life is because you made this mistake or somebody did something to you. Fix it. And Carrie is a really good example for somebody who just said, no, this isn't right, and I'm gonna make it right.
Yeah, I think she just texted me, what do you think Shelley thinks? And I hope she's listening because you just answered her. And I think that you're right. And of course, it is all about wanting to stand up and do things for yourself. I mean, I so often think about all the things I've done in my life with no counsel, with no assistance, and, you know, like trudged through it and thought to myself, I don't have a clue what the hell I am doing. Not a clue.
But you know, again, I'm not patting myself on the back, but this is what I mean about the difference between teenagers today and teenagers when I was growing up. I was running my own company when I was 19 years old. It was my father's repair shop, and he left. We had some upheaval in my family. My dad left to go and start another company somewhere. And at 19 years old, he dumps this repair shop in my lap that, 30 years ago was, or 25 years ago was something like $30,000 in debt. So that'd be like $200,000 today. And I ran it for 2 years. At 19 years old, I figured it out. I figured out how to do payroll. I figured out how to keep the stock going. I figured out how to make appointments. And in under a couple of weeks, I taught myself how to run a business, and I ran it successfully for 2 years. So it always surprises me when kids say, and they make excuses. No, if you just become a little creative and imaginative, you can do anything that's put in front of you. It doesn't matter how young you are. And people shouldn't use being young as an excuse for lacking compassion or lacking a sense of responsibility. You can develop that at any time.
Yeah, well, and I think there's also a lot of that's none of my business, or I can't get in the middle of that. I don't, there's a lot of that, and those are high-ranking excuses for a lot of different people, Shelley. How many times have I talked about watching some of the videos in the mall where the two girls jump the other girl? And so many people, I mean, an elderly lady standing and watching, I can understand. She doesn't want to get the hell kicked out of her. But even grown men didn't do anything to stop somebody else being hurt. So
one other thing, get into the book, of the story about the little girl. Was there any end cap? Was there anything more about that, like how the little girl reacted to being asked to leave, or did the grandmother say anything? Was there anything more to that story?
Oh, yeah. Well, the grandmother speaks, and she was, like, beside herself. And, of course, that's how it got into the media, is grandma, took a stand. And
good.
And KFC they're bending over backwards now to make amends for someone else's behavior. And it will, I'm sure, be rectified. She'll probably have enough chicken to eat the rest of her life. But the point is that it happened. And
right.
And the point is that, why? Why?
Right. Exactly. Why?
I mean, it also brings me back to many years ago, same restaurant, same neighborhood, a man. I can still remember his name. This was like 1985. He was burnt badly, 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 badly. In his face, he had no hair. His ears were gone. The scars on his face were more like somebody took clay and made a head for somebody out of soft clay. And he was, I loved him. It took me weeks to get close to him because you could tell that he was not ashamed or anything like that, and had a great deal of pride as to the fact that he had survived what he survived. But he was very aloof and very private. So it took a long time for me to become friends with him and let him know that I didn't just want to be friends because I felt sorry for him, because that's not what it was about. I was proud of him. I felt an admiration for somebody who could have, first of all, lived through what he lived through and still have courage enough to go out every day and let other people make their own assumptions or their surprised looks on their faces and everything. He endured that every day. And I never forgot. I never, ever forgot him. And ironically, he was one of the first, well, not ironically, I guess it seems obvious that I would, to think of him after Mike got hurt. And I remembered him, and I thought to myself, gosh, if he could survive, something blew up on him, his whole body. He never was real clear about it. It was an explosion of some kind.
Mm.
And he gave me courage for Mike all those years later. He gave me courage.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
So, yeah, so I mean, everything happens, I believe, for a reason, and all the things that come before you that are uncomfortable or that make you wonder why this is in your life now all of a sudden is for a reason. And you never know how soon, you know, you're gonna need to draw from that experience, but you do. And, of course, that's one of the things wrong, like I said a few minutes ago, with having somebody so young be in a place where they have to make off-the-cuff decisions without any experience to base them on. And that's what happens in many, many cases. I mean, that used to happen at the Institute. I'd have somebody who'd had jobs where the only person that they dealt with was their immediate boss, and they worked in an office, and sometimes they didn't even talk on the phone to deal with people. Dealing with people and managing people are real jobs. Real jobs in every sense of the word, because we are all so different. And you might say to me, Renee, how the hell are you today? And I talk right back to you, and you might say that to somebody else, and they're like, what? What did you say to me?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean, how? What is that supposed to mean? I mean, you can imagine. You know? So it is what it is, but it has to come from experience and respect and what kind of morals you have about how, you know, how you feel about others and how you treat them. So This is great news about Carrie. It's sad news about this adorable little girl, but it also maybe will help another adorable little girl or boy someplace else in another part of the world who might be going through the same thing. So that's the best way, I think, for us to look at what happened, and
I think the fact that there's such a moral outrage from people, because I've been Googling this while you've been talking, and there's so many stories about this, and the general consensus is outrage that this little girl was asked to leave. So I don't really think it's such a sad story. I think that it was unconscionable that it happened to begin with, but maybe the public outrage and support for this little girl will end up being a cloud with a silver lining for her, seeing how many people are rallying to her defense, complete strangers that don't even know her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's what we hope the rest of our world will always do. We hope and we've talked about that a lot of times on the show, if we could only be those people all of the time without any of the incidents that enrage us, so that we realize that we're not being all that we can be, there always has to be something that, like, pushes our buttons to just stand up and realize that we have to purely and simply be nicer and kinder. So
that's right.
I think it will serve its purpose and maybe help some other kids down the road and make things more pleasant for them. So, and my hat goes off to Grandma. You must be a grandma like me. You rock. I think that.
I see what you mean about the eye patch. It really is quite adorable. I mean, you know, it's sweet and loving, and you can tell that it looks like it was handmade.
Yep, exactly. And how proud is a grandma to be able to walk out and say, you know, my little girl is so strong, she survived this. That's what grandma's saying.
That's exactly.
I mean, that's how I feel. That's how I feel about Mike. If somebody says anything to me about Mike, I immediately get into my armor. It's like, you know, when some of the other stuff happened with him and people would, you know, be judgmental and everything, I would be, you know this about me, it's hard to shut me up when I see somebody done wrong. And it could be you tomorrow. And if you were smart, you'd think about that. It could always be you tomorrow or in the next 5 minutes. So that's one of the things that we haven't discussed yet, and that, of course, is how, in the book, Izzy talks about what kind of punishment needs to come from acts of bullying or unkindness or abuse that is directed by children to children. And
right.
This particular chapter says the punishment will fit the crime. However, the school should strive to minimize the need for punishment. Parties involved in disputes will be encouraged to solve their problems directly with each other to their mutual satisfaction. However, when this process fails or when people break inviolable school rules, it can become necessary to administer punishment. An essential principle for moral discipline is that the punishment must fit the crime. Otherwise, it'll be ineffective and immoral as well. The purpose of punishment is to deter crime, to reform lawbreakers so that they will become better people, and to have the lawbreakers make restitution for those they harmed. The commonly mandated punishments of suspension and expulsion are usually immoral. They have no relationship to the crime, are usually far more severe than the crime, and tend to cause more harm than good. Amen. A bad kid is pleased that they got 10-day suspension. They don't have to go to school for 10 days. A kid that has no morals or thinks that they can get away with anything they want to is pleased to be suspended for 10 days. Excuse me, I'm having a little allergy attack here this morning. The commonly mandated punishments of suspension and expulsion are usually immoral. They have no relationship to the crime, are usually far more severe than the crime, and tend to cause more harm than good. They rarely reform the lawbreaker, and they do not provide restitution to the victim. Thus, suspension will no longer be a routine punishment in our school. Expulsion will only be used when we believe we are incapable of preventing being real dangers to themselves or to others. What kind of a scenario do you think that would be, Shelley? If you were really concerned that you couldn't stop anything like this from happening again, what kind of... Can you think of a scenario where that would be true?
Well, I think the only time that you'd have that is when you're talking about a child that's sort of like sociopathic. I think that normal kids would respond to conversations to help them bring out their sensitivities. I think the only time that it's going to escalate is, number one, you know, if you go to what he's talking about, you know, immoral consequences that are too severe and that just injure the perpetrator even more, because we've already discussed that bullies are also victims on some level, and that's why they're acting out. But the only time I think that it would escalate is if the person was sociopathic and not a bully, and they wouldn't respond to that type anyway. Then that's when more severe restrictions have to come, like maybe even taking them out of the school or expelling them. I don't think they should just be expelled and thrown out to society. They should be forced to get some sort of assistance, you know, counseling.
So really what we're thinking is what we've talked about so many times before, when there's actual abuse going on and you actually care for the safety, right, of the child that's being bullied and the bully themselves. So then we're talking about expulsion, but then there should be some intervention from, you know, some kind of enforcement, either some help mentally, some kind of punishment for doing harm to another person. The things that we talked about that actually take it out of the bullying arena and into a crime or a some kind of a misdemeanor that occurred in school, like some of the things that we see on TV right now, where the girls, ironically, it's so often girls too. That's something else that we're going to have to talk about at some point in time. The anger that is in our teenage girls is like scary. So we're really talking about expulsion only happening when there has to be a enforcement intervention, like the authorities, like police or something along those cases. So another essential principle we will adhere to is freedom of speech. Our founding fathers were wise people. They had excellent reasons for guaranteeing us freedom of speech and putting it in the very First Amendment of the Bill of Rights. Our Constitution guarantees people the right to say things others find offensive without fear of punishment. This right is an absolute necessity for a healthy, free society. Freedom of speech is a wonderful principle, not only for the government, but also for our personal lives. Freedom of speech is mandated by the Golden Rule. Just as we would like to feel free to say what we want without being punished, we must allow others to say what they want, no matter how much we don't like it, without punishing them. Our response to words is subjective, meaning that when we get upset by words, we are really upset with ourselves, and it is immoral to punish people for our subjective response to what they say. Oh, wow, that is so true. Freedom of speech is also the solution to verbal bullying. When we try to stop people from saying mean things to us, they continue to do it. And when we permit them to do it, they stop. We can provide practical demonstration of this principle to anyone who requests it. And I've talked about this 100 times, all the various ways that Izzy taught us when we did role-playing and things like that, and it's absolutely the truth. Only speech that can cause objective harm to people's bodies or property or deny them liberty is to be forbidden. This ban includes threats of violence and incitement to violence. In other words, you know, I'm going to shoot you, I'm going to kill you. Things like that would have to be addressed. Our school will try to encourage proper speech habits, primarily by speaking properly ourselves. Uh-huh. And to discourage improper speech, but we will do so respectfully, without punishment. And we will do our best to teach children to respond with respect when others speak to them disrespectfully. For this is the best antidote or disrespectful speech as well as necessary preparation for successful lives. We welcome any suggestion from parents, students, or other community members on how to help our school function in accordance with the Golden Rule. We also encourage you to present the school policy to any moral leaders you respect and ask for their opinions, suggestions, and advice. So, again, he's trying to get us and the kids and everybody involved to behave with some respectful maturity and not, this all goes back to sticks and stones and words can never hurt me and all this kind of stuff. The real meaning behind that, of course words can hurt you. They can hurt your feelings and they can possibly leave you with a mini internal scar if it hurt your feelings real bad. But it doesn't cause bodily damage or harm.
Well, and the truth of the matter is, whether people choose to accept this or not, the truth of the matter is that words can only hurt you if you let them. If somebody punches you in the arm, that's a physical impact. It's going to hurt. You know, I mean, you're not making a choice. They're impacting your body. Your body is going to have a reaction. You're not choosing to have the reaction. Your body is having the reaction. But when somebody says something to you that's mean or unkind, you're choosing to have hurt feelings. And once you kind of get a handle on that, you can choose to not let it bother you and to go to a level of compassion saying, wow, this person must be having a bad day. Otherwise, they wouldn't want to be mean to me. And instead of feeling bad about yourself, you feel compassion towards them. And that's something that can be developed, you know. But what's interesting about all this is that, and I've talked about martial arts before, you know, he's talking about freedom of speech and that you can't really impose upon other people not to say bad things to you, that the more you try to get them to stop, the more they continue. And when you give them permission to say mean things to you, it's like then all of a sudden they don't want to anymore. And if you think about jiu-jitsu and some of the martial arts, they use people's energy against them. You know, you've heard this thing that cops teach people, if an attacker tries to grab you and drag you somewhere, if you fight and struggle, you're actually making it easier for them to drag you. But if you were just to go limp and like, go ahead, drag me somewhere, and not fight against it and try to make them stop dragging you, 9 out of 10 people couldn't hold on to you because you become like dead weight, because you're not resisting them anymore, you know? So a lot of times they even say, just go limp. The person will end up dropping you. But when you struggle against somebody who's trying to grab you or do something to you, you're actually making it easier for them to, you know, to take you away. The same thing in jiu-jitsu, they teach you that if somebody is like throwing a punch at you, instead of trying to block the punch, again, all right, you're resisting them. Instead of trying to block the punch, which will potentially cause injury to you, if you grab the person's fist and pull it in the direction that they're trying to punch you, they end up losing their balance and falling. They can't maintain that because they were expecting to have their fist stop, so they were in a stance like that. If their fist goes past the point that they were going to like land on your face or in your arm or in your chest or wherever they're trying to punch you, all right, that's in their brain how they've, you know, how they've steadied themselves. But if you move out of the way or if you grab their fist as it's coming towards you, and this is one of the things you learn in martial arts, and you pull them in the direction they were throwing the punch, they completely lose their balance and their power, and they can't hurt you. So it's interesting that both those things in two different arenas, from a physical standpoint, are teaching the same philosophy about not trying to, you know, not trying to prevent it, but just kind of like allowing the other person's energy to defeat them themselves.
Well, and that's all true, and that's Izzy even has a little game to teach kids to be able to handle the verbal attacks. But again, you know, we've said this a million times. If it's a physical attack, it's no longer bullying. It becomes a crime.
And, exactly.
And, of course, you're right. Anything, and Izzy just says, is it true what somebody said about you? So we talked about the fact that if it is true, if you are, suffering with a severe case of acne and everybody in school is calling you pizza face and stuff like that, and it is true, you have to have a little bit of reality set in, you know. And I just had this conversation with a grandchild. He's 16, almost 17, and he had a major breakout here a few months ago, and it's going away now because he's getting through that part of his puberty, you know. And I said, do kids call you pizza face? And he said, yeah. I said, really? And he goes, yeah, but they're friends. He said, so they just do it, you know, because they're messing with me and I'm okay with it. He said, nobody that I'm not friends with has ever said that to me. He said, that would feel different. Now, how mature is that, Shel? How mature is that?
That's extremely mature, and that's a breath of fresh air, you know, when you hear so many of these kids just like completely overreacting and all that. That was wonderful. Hat's off to him.
Yeah, and that's what I said to him. I said, wow. I said, that's very grown up, honey, because, of course, you're right. And he said, besides that, Graham, it's not coming from a bad place. They're just messing with me. And I said, well, I said, that's good, too, you know, because we come from a family of picker-oners. I mean, we pick on each other all the time. The kids make fun of the way I laugh. If I start laughing, because they say that when I get done laughing, I always go, when I'm done laughing. And then when I do that, they all start laughing, so they pick on me personally. Josh gets on all the time because he's clumsy. And it's like the more we pick on him, the more clumsy he becomes. So we all pick on each other, and it's in good fun, and it also helps you realize that it doesn't mean as much as you give it credence to if somebody else says it to you. So I think, though, that what you said about the words and the unkind remarks to you, you can let them roll off you. You can. There's a lot of different ways that you cannot let them get inside and fester. And everybody's different, and you may need to find your own way, but it's smart to not let somebody else's words or thoughts or opinions alter who you are. It's, mm-hmm. first of all, not their right, so don't mm-hmm. allow it. It's your right to be.
There are so many really, really good books out there that talk about that. I think one of the first books I ever read that really drove that point home to me is a book called Peace Pilgrim. It's actually a free book. If you were to Google Peace Pilgrim Society on the internet, they actually send you the book for free. There's a group that the woman that was Peace Pilgrim that walked around the country for something like 25 years, coast to coast. She never lived anywhere. She didn't have a paying job, but she was like a prophet. She was like a modern-day prophet. She fasted for 40 days, just like Jesus, and she didn't have any religious affiliation. She just had this epiphany one night and decided that she was going to go through some sort of a religious awakening, and at the end of it, she became vegetarian. She had this mission to bring about an ideal for peace. And she was in her book, she talked about not allowing the unkindness of others to make you, number one, not like them, or make you feel bad about yourself, that both these emotions are choices that we don't have to make. And then she talked about, she told some real true stories in there about things that had happened to her. And because she had true compassion for other people, she was able to stop unkindness. There was even a man who was attacking a little girl, and he was violent. I mean, he was a pedophile. He was going to hurt the little girl, and she walked up on this scene But instead of being horrified and angry with the man, she felt compassion for him, that he would be so lost that he could hurt a child. And he fell apart. Not only did he let the little girl go, but he didn't harm her, you know, where, I mean, he had a weapon and everything. And he was completely disarmed by her exuding this compassion towards him and not throwing hate in his direction. And she told some other stories that were similar, where she was put in positions of really being harmed by somebody. And the whole, and this was a true story. This was a biography that was written about her. And it was just an absolutely amazing story. I highly recommend the book. But she talks about anger. She talks about, people doing or saying unkind things and how you can adjust. And it was one of the most powerful books on that. And she talks about it throughout the book. And then she also talks about, you know, worldwide peace. And, you know, one of the things that's at this constant unrest with civil unrest, you know, people hurting each other is because, and one of the things we talk about is because people don't know how to be kind-hearted anymore. And it was, and then she said that's the root cause why there's not enough peace in the world. So it's a remarkable book. It's called Peace Pilgrim. And then, you know, anything by Eckhart Tolle or Deepak Chopra. And they also talk about the fact that when we get our feelings hurt, we're doing it to ourselves. So any books by either of them also talk about that. And they really help you put things in perspective. And when you can get to the point, which I've gotten in the last 2 years, nobody can really hurt my feelings anymore. Now, I'm in my mid-50s, and up until a couple years ago, that I couldn't have said that. But I can say that now because I've adopted this way of thinking and this way of putting things in check. And it really makes life more enjoyable, more full, when you can feel compassion for people instead of allowing your feelings to get hurt on a personal level, where you're always putting it back out in kindness to somebody else, regardless of how they're treating you.
Exactly. And it also has a lot to do with how you feel about yourself. If you believe that somebody is saying something about you, that you believe yourself, that's when it hurts the most. So one of the kindest things you can do for yourself is work on the issues that you don't like about yourself.
Very good point.
Yes, if you can get to the point where you're comfortable with how you deal with this or how you handle that or what you say about this or how you feel about that, then these comments and these judgments take a lesser toll, because you know that they're no longer true, even if they were at one point in time. It is a constant journey to be a better person. Let's face it, it really is. And every day, if your eyes are open and your heart is open, you meet people that can teach you things that make you a better person. Sometimes in yourself, you know, like this little girl. Who's just so twinkly. While you saw her picture, you couldn't dull that twinkle, could you, Shel?
I saw her after pictures, and she has the same expression now that she did in the before picture before she was scarred.
Right, exactly. So it is what it is. So let me finish this because we're down to just a few minutes. Teaching kids how not to be victims, which is a lot to do with what we just talked about. If you become proficient with these techniques, you should be able to help close to 90% of the kids you work with. I recommend that you first become confident doing these techniques with individual children. Once you feel confident, you can conduct them in front of an entire class or in a school assembly, just as I am presenting to a whole group in this seminar. In general, as long as you can have a coherent conversation with a child, you can probably help him or her with these techniques. By the time the average child is 7 years old, she or he can play these games with you. Even bright, mature 5-year-olds can do it. However, you can expect to fail with about 10% of the population. The following are some of the reasons. Number one is serious neurological, emotional, or intellectual impairments can interfere with a child's ability to understand and apply the lessons. Many of these children first need their conditions to be treated with medication and or psychotherapy before they can be taught to handle bullying. Some may never be able to do it despite all of our efforts. Number two, Children who have lived their whole lives in an environment where everyone, including adult authority figures, tells them that they mustn't let anyone get away with any kind of aggression or disrespect towards them, can be more difficult to help. It's not impossible, but we may require more time and role-playing practice. In other words, if you have the adults in your life, which can often even be in a school surrounding, in a any kind of adult-supervised circumstance, where a parent or this adult says to you at a early age, 5, 6, 7, don't let Renee get away with that. You go over there and tell her she can't talk to you like that. She doesn't have the right to say those things to you, and you let her know it. Make sure Shelley knows that she can't be the first one in line all the time, because you can be first in line once in a while. Those kind of things, I think people think that they're building up their kids' ability to be a leader. Instead, they're setting them up for knockdowns is what they're really doing. Because they won't always be first in line. They won't always have the last say. And that's okay. That is absolutely positively okay, because it would be impossible for a world with millions of people to have everybody be the first.
Right.
So
right.
When I work with kids who have neurological or psychological conditions that interfere with impulse control, I will try to have daily contact, if possible, during the first week or two, even though for a few minutes sometimes, to follow up and to support them in the process, doing additional role-playing if necessary. So he wants the kids to have some flexibility, to have the insight, and some of them are born with it because we see it. I talk about stories about AJ. I've talked about stories about all kinds of kids. Shelley has 3 unbelievably mature nieces and nephews, great nieces and nephews, that handle lots of things on a daily basis and are very articulate about it to boot. So it is very, very easy in most cases. But, you know, they can be brainwashed by some of the other adults in their lives. So I think the biggest thing that we can learn from all of this is, you know, that you can be your own worst enemy, not the kid that's calling you, but yourself. So it's all about, you know, loving yourself, realizing that you have flaws, you're not perfect, but that's okay, because there isn't anybody that is. So,
well, I like use the word flexibility, because I do think he, you know, like that there's that old parable that says that, you know, it's important to bend so you don't break, meaning that if you're too rigid and if things always have to be perfect and in a particular way for you, you are going to have an unhealthy life, because you're always going to be breaking. If you're not flexible and willing to bend a little bit, you're not going to have as much joy out of life. So that's a very important point to make. You've got to be flexible and not be unreasonably expecting of people to treat you a particular way.
And you can't expect other people to make your life perfect. That has to come from you.
Exactly.
Because you're the only one knows what perfection fits.
That's right.
Perfection and Shelley's perfection are 2 different things. So you need what suits you, what fits you. I want to wish everybody a great day today. The sun is shining here in South Florida. It's supposed to be in the 80s, although it is rainy season, so you never know what's going to happen late this afternoon. But we'll be back tomorrow, and we're going to talk about on the Friendly Witch Doctor show, I want to talk about things like fibromyalgia and pain, and there's a lot of things going on in people's body that have to do with, you know, not just, of course, their lifestyle and what they eat and things like that, but nerve endings, and fibromyalgia is a big thing, and it covers a lot of conversations around the world today, fibromyalgia. So we're going to talk about that a little bit and see what some of the things that we can do. And, of course, alkalinity and things like that are going to enter into it that we've already talked about before, but I think it bears repeating. So we will be back tomorrow. I hope you'll join us. Everybody go out and have a great day. God bless. And good luck, Carrie. I know everything is going to be absolutely perfect in your world very soon. Thank you. Thanks, Shell. Talk to you soon, babe.
Thanks, Reedy, and good luck to Carrie from me as well. All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.